You're listening to Charlottesville's Podcasting Network. I'm Dan Gould. Over 10 years have passed since the groundbreaking 2020 plan, Aging in Community, was finalized. Action 2020 is an initiative to create a challenging but doable 5-year action plan to achieve the goals of the 2020 plan. Billy Campbell is the Senior Program Manager for the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission and an Executive Director of TJPDC Corporation. She has been with the TJPDC since 1999, when she changed careers from structural engineering. She has a wide-ranging role at TJPDC, managing a variety of projects, including TJPDC's housing program, and carrying out management and administrative functions for the regional agency. She has been actively involved in efforts to make our region age-friendly. She has been a leader in the Livable for a Lifetime, L4L, initiative since its inception in 2006 to promote amenities for ease, comfort, and hospitality in homes and communities, and is a member of the Chamber's Aging in Place Business Roundtable. She holds a Master of Public Administration from George Mason University. Ms. Campbell spoke at the Wednesday, February 11, 2015 meeting of the Senior Statesmen of Virginia. The meeting was held at the Senior Center in Charlottesville. Following the presentation, questions were taken from the audience. The program was moderated by SSV past president Sue Liberman. Our podcast is entitled Action 2020, Celebration and Looking Ahead. Here's Sue Liberman.
It gives me great pleasure to introduce Billy Campbell, who is not only an extraordinarily valued friend of mine, she's also the senior program manager for the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission and executive director of the TJPDC Corporation, which is the nonprofit companion of the planning district. She's been with the planning district since 1999, when she, in fact, changed careers from being and working as a structural engineer. She has a wide-ranging role at the planning district, managing a variety of programs, heading the housing program, carrying out management and administrative functions for the regional agency. She's been actively involved in efforts out making our region age-friendly, and that is the thrust of the 2020 program. She's been a leader in Livable for a Lifetime, in short, L4L. It's an initiative that was born in 2006 to promote amenities for ease, comfort, and hospitality in homes and communities, and is a member of the Chamber's Aging in Place Business Roundtable. Billy holds a Master's of Public Administration from George Mason University. And anything else she wants to disclose about herself, she should feel free. Anyway, please welcome Billy Campbell.
Thank you, Sue. It's a real pleasure to be here with you today, and I was happy to accept Sue's invitation. We are very good friends, and she and I are participate in a number of things in the community together. So it's a real pleasure to be here to share with you about Action 2020. I'm going to see if I can figure out how to make my slide come up there. Okay, so Action 2020 is a relatively new initiative. It's been underway for a little over a year now, and it is a short-term project, so we're hoping to wrap up here in the next several months. But our goal is to create a 5-year action plan that would be challenging and doable for the community to realize the goals that were in the 2020 plan, Aging in Community, which was developed back in 2000 to 2003. We have been engaged in kind of an input process, and so we're happy to not only take your questions at the end of this presentation, but also to take some ideas and suggestions of things that we might want to include in the plan that you might know about or that you know of a need that needs to be addressed. So the 2020 plan, Aging and Community, was actually created between 2000 and 2003. The Jefferson Area Board for Aging, JABA, was the leader of that effort, and it was a huge community effort. It involved over 500 people, over 85 organizations. It was a big outreach effort, and there was a lot of opportunity for input and discussion and deliberation about what would go into that plan. So some of you here may have been involved in that. Were some of you here back in 2000, 2003? So Susan Seidler from JABA was part of that, Jerry. It was a pretty extraordinary effort. It's kind of hard to overstate how important that was. We were one of the very few communities in the country to develop a plan on aging that early. It's been a very important document, and it was it really serves as a guide for this community to be age friendly. So it was first issued in 2003. I don't know if any of you have seen the plan. This is what it looks like. 97 pages long. A lot of good information, but a lot of reading. And so a lot of people are familiar with the plan, but may not have read the entire plan. There was also, at the time that it was released, a summary of the executive summary, which is a little more digestible, quite short, and really focuses on the main goals of the plan. And more recently, JABA has published another summary of the plan that also includes recent initiatives as examples of the kinds of activities that they were hoping to promote by developing this plan. So just to share a little bit about kind of the recognition that the plan has got and its kind of sweeping scope, it was awarded the Livable Communities for All Ages Award, which is a very prestigious award. It's a national competition that was sponsored by the United States Department of Health and Human Services within their administration on aging, which really focuses on age-friendly communities. So it was recognized because of it being so comprehensive and inclusive, and really one of the first approaches to prepare for the dramatic increase in the area's senior citizens population by the year 2025. In addition to the plan itself receiving an award, our region, which is called Planning District 10, we are the Thomas Jefferson Planning District. I work for the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission. The state of Virginia is divided into 21 planning districts, and we are Planning District number 10. So sometimes you will see things that say 10, like Region 10, and that refers to our identity as Planning District 10. So that includes the city of Charlottesville and the five surrounding counties, Albemarle, Fluvanna, Greene, Louisa, and Nelson. So in 2012, the planning district itself was named one of the best five intergenerational communities in 2012, and you can see the logo there recognizing that in 2012. So that's not just a recognition of the planning work that went into the 2020 plan, but also what is on the ground and the services that are in place and the commitment of this region to be age-friendly. So Sue mentioned that I'm part of Livable for a Lifetime, or L4L, and we have other people here who are part of that. Peter Thompson has been meeting with us regularly as part of this Action 2020 effort. Jay, whose last name I cannot say, from the county. Jay, stand up and tell us your name.
Jay Slotworth.
Okay, so he is a recent addition to the L4L Steering Committee. Taking the seat that was filled previously by George Shadman in Public Works, but as we moved into more of a community planning work, the county felt that it would be good to have a representative on L4L who was part of community development. And I am also happy to announce that Sue Lieberman has agreed to come on board the L4L Steering Committee. We have, and I'll show you some of the membership of that, we have expanded over the years, and we have had a representative from the Aging in Place Business Roundtable from the Chamber who recently stepped down as chair of that group, and so we looked for a new representative, and Sue has graciously agreed to serve in that role, so her first meeting with us will be next week. When we did the introduction, we did not use the term universal design. That was really what we said Livable for a Lifetime would do, is that we would promote universal design application in homes and communities. So universal design is a design method where you design objects, think of kind of the OXO kitchen tools that are easy to use. People can use right-handed, left-handed. People can have high grip strength or low grip strength, those kinds of things. So it's meant to design products and homes and communities to be used by the widest number of people, regardless of their ability, without real adjustment or adaptation. So it's a concept, but it's a little hard for people to kind of get their heads around. And the term universal design, we have found that people interpret that as specialized design, which is always interesting to me that there's a translation there from that word universal, which is very broad, to specialize, but that really is how it's interpreted, that universal design is really only meant for people who have some kind of an impairment or need some kind of an accommodation in order to do things. And so we have changed our terminology, and so you heard that in the introduction. We don't use universal design as a term much anymore, because what we're trying to get is a concept that it makes things easier for everybody. So instead we talk about amenities for ease, things that are easy to use, comfort, things that are comfortable, and things that are for hospitality. Because many things that we have in our homes and our communities actually create barriers for people to be invited into our homes or to be fully included in the community. And so what we're about is trying to address those barriers and make sure that everybody can live life in the community to the fullest. So the Livable for a Lifetime initiative was a direct product of the 2020 plan, and as Sue mentioned, we did start this initiative back in 2006, and the initial partners in that were JABA and Piedmont Housing Alliance and the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission. So we have done a variety of projects, educational workshops, displays, websites, different kinds of materials, news briefs, promotion of the livable home tax credit, a variety of activities over our existence. And along the way, we have attracted new partners to be part of that. So we have representatives from the city of Charlottesville. We have Jay from Albemarle County. The University of Virginia Institute on Aging has been part of our group. Peter Thompson represents the Senior Center, and Sue is the new representative for the Aging in Place Business Roundtable. So just to reiterate our goal for Action 2020, it's to create a challenging but doable 5-year action plan to achieve the goals and objectives of the 2020 plan, Aging in Community. So when the initial planning effort back in 2003 was done, they used 2020 as part of that plan, and it was chosen really for a dual purpose. 2020 is what we think of as eyesight, and oftentimes when you see 2020 written with the plan, people will put a little slash mark in the middle because they think of it as 2020 vision, and it was actually intended to evoke a clear vision for the future, and so that was intentional that they used the number 2020 as part of the plan. But it was also looking forward to the year 2020, and so a lot of what makes up the age wave is us baby boomers, that kind of bulge in the demographic pipeline, coming to our later years. And so 2020 is when kind of the first of the baby boomers will start to approach the age of 75. And needs often start to change around then. And so that was part of it, is actually to evoke that year as well as kind of a visionary look toward the future. So Livable for a Lifetime was grounded in the 2020 plan. And as we've done our activities over the years, they are connected to the goals of the 2020 plan, but the 2020 plan itself has kind of faded into the background somewhat. We had some renewed interest in that because we had some inquiries that were showing up the end of 2013. Many of those were related to a new project that the National Association for Area Agencies on Aging were doing. They were getting ready to work with some new communities, doing what we have already started to do here to make communities age friendly. And so they wanted to learn some lessons from communities who have been in the trenches and who have been doing things and who have been recognized for their efforts. And so one of their staff people from N4A is what they call themselves, the National Association for Area Agencies on Aging, talked to several members of the Livable for a Lifetime Steering Committee, trying to ask what we had done, what kind of partnerships worked, what kinds of things we had run into. And so we had conversation about that at our steering committee meetings. And it caused us to kind of look back at the 2020 plan. It's over 10 years old. It was kind of a shock to us to find out that so much time had gone by and that the year 2020 was coming up pretty fast. So we felt like it was probably time for us to kind of invest some time in the plan, to really look at it more carefully, to make sure that it was up to date, that it reflected what was true in the community now, not just what was true in the community back in 2000, and to really come up with things that would make sense to move us toward that vision that was set out by the 2020 plan by the year 2020. So we felt that that would take a renewed effort and focus in order to do that. So our main goal is to create this five-year action plan, but we do have some additional goals, some secondary goals. When we looked at the 2020 plan, we thought the goals were a little wordy and sometimes a little vague and sometimes not geared quite as much toward action as we thought an action plan should be. So one of our secondary goals was to keep the essence of the 2020 plan goals, but to shorten them and streamline them and make sure that they were geared toward action. We don't want the plan to be something that is just a good idea. We really want it to be put into practice. Secondly, we wanted to recognize and celebrate progress. There has been a lot of change in our community over the last 10 or 12 years, and we wanted to recognize that and celebrate it. We've also found that there are a lot of new initiatives in the community that have started since 2003 that weren't even around back then, and we wanted to bring those in and see what kind of contributions they could make in the planning process and in making our community more age-friendly. And lastly, we wanted to foster greater community ownership of the plan. For those of you who are familiar with the plan or have heard people talk about the plan, you may have heard it referred to as JABA's 2020 plan. And I myself have been guilty of that. JABA was a leader in this, but it was really intended to be a community plan. But it has kind of been seen as JABA's plan instead of a community plan. And so one of the stated objectives of this was to create greater community ownership of the plan. So one of the first things we did was we created an online survey using SurveyMonkey. And it was based on the goals in the 2020 plan. And so here are the chapters that were in the 2020 plan: promoting coordinated and accessible health care, supporting maximum independence and lifelong health, offering choices, affordable living options for seniors and support to family caregivers, designing communities to enhance quality of life, fostering vibrant engagement in life, and strengthening caring communities through active citizenship. So in kind of the world of age-friendly communities, there are some things that are kind of recognized as kind of characteristics of what age-friendly communities are. So AARP has recently begun a network of age-friendly communities. And so what they say is that they help communities become great places for all ages by adopting such features as safe, walkable streets, better housing and transportation options, access to key services, and opportunities for residents to participate in community activities. So you can see how closely their definition lines up with what the 2020 plan says. And there are other standards. The World Health Organization has a checklist of essential features for age-friendly communities, and very much mirrors what was in the 2020 plan. So it was a little bit ahead of its time, I think, in recognizing what an age-friendly community would be like. So our survey was relatively simple. We pretty much just listed the goals in the plan. We asked people to say, have we accomplished this? Is it done? Is it something that's still needed? Is it a goal that needs to be clarified? Or is it something that should just be deleted from the plan? So this is the first question in the survey, and it shows goal one in the plan, which is to promote coordinated and accessible health care. And it's got the goal and the strategies from the plan, promote access to high-quality health care, pharmaceuticals and support services, increase advocacy for improving cost and coverage for health care, promote local models of affordable health services, and improve communication, coordination, and responsiveness of healthcare delivery in the region. So you can see from the bars there that at the top, these are the folks who said, we've done that. We've accomplished that goal. So you can see kind of a little sliver of blue on some of the bars. At the bottom, you can see blue, and blue means that we need to clarify the goal. And then you can see a little band of red in some of the bars, and those are people who had said this goal is not relevant and we can delete that. But by far, and this was true across the board on the survey, most people said keep this goal. This is still a valid goal. And so what we found was that the 2020 plan and the goals in the plan were still very relevant, still seen as needed, overwhelmingly, the results that we got from the survey said we need to keep this as a goal. But we also asked for comments in the survey about the goals. And here are some of the things that they said, that the goals are very broad, that the goals need specifics, that you need an action plan to accomplish the above, that there are some specifics and examples that are needed, and that most of the goals are just too vague and abstract. So we didn't want the plan to be just apple pie and motherhood. We want it to be a real guide to action and to really specify things that would be done. So we felt that the survey kind of validated what we thought, that the plan itself was very relevant, that it did need some shortening and some streamlining in the goals, and that it did need to be geared more toward action. So the survey really helped us clarify what it was we were doing and kind of validate the effort. So here at the Senior Center, back in May, we had a kickoff event. So we were doing work prior to the kickoff event, and that was here, and we had a pretty straightforward agenda. We did an overview of the Action 2020 process, same as what we're doing today. We presented the survey results in a little more detail than what I just did. We had some revised goals based on what we heard from the survey, and so we had made an attempt at revising the goals to make them shorter and clearer and more geared toward action. And we were getting ready then to plan the next step of the process, which is topical input series, which we were doing across the community. So we were pleased that we had a good number of people here, that they were very participated very fully in this. We put them to work on the goals. They had a lot of good comments. We recorded all of those comments and took that into account and redrafted the goals. And the goals are still subject to additional redrafting as we continue through this process. One of the things that we asked the group to do was to help us get ready to plan the next step in the process, which was a topical series. So we kind of narrowed down and shortened the titles for the topic areas. So something that would be a little bit easier to say and to understand. So the group shortened these down into these areas: healthcare, engagement, active and independent living, housing and long-term care, and transportation. So that gave us some guidance then to do the next step, which is to go out and to do input across the community to hear from folks in the community what needed to be included in the plan. So as the steering committee came back together after we had the input session, we decided to make a modification to our work program. So we did do a series of rural sessions. We specifically went out to the four outlying rural counties. What the steering committee felt was true was, even if you have a process that you have described as being fully regional, oftentimes the rural localities feel somewhat disenfranchised. They are out there. It's not always easy for them to come into the Charlottesville area, to come to sessions. Their needs are really the same, but the way you can go about addressing needs in rural localities needs to be different than it is in the more urban areas of the region. So we wanted to make sure that rural voices were part of this, and that they actually had a part, felt like they owned the plan and were part of the plan. And so we went out and did four sessions last September around the region. So the interesting thing is we went to Louisa County to the Betty Queen Center, which did not exist back in 2003. This is a brand new intergenerational center and provides a lot of activities and a lot of good interaction with parks and recreation. And so it's a real example of what it takes to be an age-friendly community, to offer this intergenerational opportunity and to offer a wide variety of activities through Parks and Rec as well. We also went to Fluvanna County and went to their library, and this building wasn't there in 2003 either. This is a new building, and it serves as a community center as well as a library, a lot of activities, and so another example of progress that has taken place. The Nelson Center was a school, I think, not in use in 2000. And underwent a transformation into being the Nelson Center, which is a community center. All kinds of groups meet there. JABA has a presence there. The Nelson County Community Development Foundation has an office there. It's a real center of the community in Nelson County. And that was not in existence back in 2003. In Greene County, we went to the PVCC Center, which is on the second floor of the library building. I'm not sure when the building was built. It was right around the time that the plan was being done, I think. But PVC was not there. This was a new thing that the community came together. They really wanted to have a center and to make use of this building, and reach an agreement with PVCC and raise funds to get this center in Greene County, in a place that is accessible, offers a lot of classes. When we've been out there, there's been art displays, other kinds of things. It's a real asset to the community. And again, that was not there back in 2003. And so even by where we were in the rural localities, it really gave us a sense of the things that localities and communities have been doing to make communities more age-friendly, and to really provide a wide variety of activities and information and connection. So at each of those, we went through all of the topic areas that were listed. But when we went out then after the rural series, we did a series of topical sessions. And then we did the same thing at the agenda was largely the same. We looked back, we identified progress that had been taking place since the plan was done in 2003, and that was very exciting because there's been a lot of progress and people really got into the process of identifying the things in their communities that have changed since 2003 that really helped their communities be more vibrant and engaging. So we looked forward at activities that could be included in the plan. Sometimes it was concrete ideas about things that would be in the plan. Sometimes It was just the expression of a need or a gap, some kind of a lack in the community that should be addressed. So we did the same agenda at the topical sessions, but we did it in a more narrow way. So we went to the Jaunt Office for Transportation. We looked back at the things that had happened in transportation since 2003, and we looked forward to what was happening, to what could happen to improve transportation, which is a huge issue as we move forward in the future. Similarly, we were here at the Senior Center. We looked at engagement, active and independent living here. We went to Parkview at South Pantops, another building that was not around in 2003, an age-restricted rental community. And lastly, we went to the Thomas Jefferson Health District, which has been doing regional planning of its own, and the Map to Health work that they've been doing has been right in line with the promotion of active lifestyles and healthy living. So we got just a lot of input from all of those sessions, the rural sessions and the topical sessions. And from there, then we have recruited people to work with us on committees to really focus on these topic areas and start to flesh them out. So just want to run down briefly some of the things that so far we have identified as part of the plan. So our planning process has been what has happened since 2003 that was a great thing that really makes your community age friendly. Then and we identified kind of ideas and the needs, and what the committees have done first is to start to identify those things that we can already find that are either planned or already in progress. So that gives us an idea of kind of some of the things that are already moving forward so that we can identify those holes and those gaps and those needs that are not yet being addressed. So the healthcare group started meeting right away. They've met three or four times. And have largely finished their work. And so you can see some of the things that they've identified as progress in the area. A lot of change in facilities, both UVA and Martha Jefferson, but also in Nelson County, the Blue Ridge Medical Center expanded greatly, added a dental clinic. There's a green care clinic now in Greene County, which did not exist back in 2003, and a big change in the way care is provided. Blue Ridge PACE, which is a program of all-inclusive care for the elderly, which is a much different model for delivering care with transportation, medical services, therapies, recreation, all in one facility. We've also seen an expansion of services, dental services, telemedicine, mental health coordination, integrated care, hospice services. Those have all been created or expanded over the last 10 or 12 years. And more training of folks going into medical careers. Some of the training is for medical careers that didn't even exist in 2003. There's a lot more specialties, a lot more therapies, and technicians that are needed. And so a continuing, evolving array of training opportunities to help people prepare for careers in healthcare. So we have identified a number of things that are ongoing, and there are still some things that are kind of left over that still need some additional work before we feel like they have enough specifics to be part of the plan. Dental care in nursing homes and assisted living facilities is a huge issue that has enormous impact on people's health. And very difficult to get dental care to them. And so that's one of the things that we're really wrestling with. How can we address this? There's a big need, really a lot of negative impact from poor dental care or lack of dental care. In healthcare, there are a lot of issues related to transitions in care. When someone goes from a nursing home to a hospital and back again, or from home to a hospital, in those transitions, a lot of things can go wrong. Doctor's orders get garbled or lost, medications get disrupted, and sometimes duplicate prescriptions are made, and so it creates a lot of issues and sometimes results in readmissions and sometimes much more serious health consequences. One of the big focuses of healthcare is not so much on wellness as just managing kind of chronic disease, but just to empower people to help do some of that management themselves instead of relying so much on healthcare professionals for that. One of the things we've seen is that the emergency rooms are used for things that are really not appropriate, which is not good for the hospitals, not good for the patients. So we want to have some viable alternatives to that. Complementary and alternative medicine, kind of holistic medicine, other acupuncture, other kinds of therapies are often a good adjunct or supplement or alternative to more traditional medicine. And so we're trying to come up with an activity around that makes sense. We're having a little trouble trying to articulate what would make sense. Particularly in the rural areas, having access to specialists is a big issue. And then on training, just to make sure that we have enough workers and that they are trained in the right specialties. And we do have, PVCC has been very responsive to that, but we also need some training for people who are already in healthcare just to know how to provide care more effectively to seniors, because it does require different communication skills, different ways of relaying information, and different techniques for dealing with their needs. So on to engagement, active and independent living. There's also been a lot of progress there. So, of course, here at the Senior Center, we all know there's a wide range of programs, and they have grown significantly over time. But we also talked about the other things and the outlying areas, the new facilities and services that are in place. The Louisa Arts Center here in Charlottesville, the Jefferson School City Center that offers a variety of programming, and the Paramount Theater, which I had forgotten was new since 2003, but certainly a center of arts and performance. We've also had a lot of opportunities for services, an expansion of food programs. The Jefferson Institute of Lifelong Learning has now become the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute and offers a variety of programs. Move to Health, which is the health district's program, really to focusing on good physical activity and good nutrition. Triad was mentioned everywhere we went as a really solid addition to services and support in the communities. We've seen expansions in parks and recreation, financial planning, programming here at the Senior Center, and the physician-referred exercise program at ACAC, which exercise as medicine. So we've been working on, this group has just gotten started. They've had one meeting so far. They are meeting at 3:30 upstairs today, and will continue their work. And so far in our first meeting, we probably have more questions and identification of things that need to be addressed than we had kind of answers and solutions. And engagement in active and independent living can be a little bit tricky because often you are trying to get people to change their behaviors. Well, there are things we can do. You know, we can provide access, we can provide good programming, we can have campaigns to promote this and raise public awareness, but we can't get people to change their behaviors. That's really a personal choice, and so trying to identify what we can do as a community so that seniors are engaged in healthy behaviors is a little bit tricky to try to figure out how to best go about that. On the connection side, we've had a lot of comments about employment, that people still want to work, and sometimes it can be difficult to find appropriate employment. There is oftentimes negative perceptions on the part of employers about older workers, and so just trying to find some ways to address that. What we heard in some of the input sessions is that people just want somebody to do things with. They want to be able to have somebody go with them to a play, and they need some way of finding somebody with similar interests and being able to connect with them and to enjoy an evening out or a lunch out or something. We haven't figured out exactly how to address that yet, but that's definitely a need that has been brought up. There's sometimes a tendency in housing and in services to kind of have people stratified by age, and yet there's enormous benefits to having intergenerational activities. And so just looking at ways to promote that and to have more of that. And lastly, to use technology. There's a lot of breaking new things out there to help connect people and to provide activities by the use of technology. Long-term planning is also kind of similar to healthy behaviors. We would like to see more seniors have long-term financial plans and really understand what it takes to be ready for retirement and end-of-life issues. But again, that's a behavioral kind of thing and oftentimes difficult to foster that change in behavior. For housing and long-term care, there's been a lot of new options. Dunlore Forest was the first community in Virginia that really had a significant number of homes that had easy living features. And these are basic accessibility features, living on one floor, without steps, with wider doorways. And it's sold out very quickly and kind of demonstrated that there's a market advantage to having these kinds of features, particularly in housing that's close into town and able to get other places. We've seen a number of kind of elderly developments, housing developments, as well as rental developments. PHA has renovated some of its rental units that were specifically for seniors. JABA took over Mountainside Assisted Living Center, and there's a variety of different community, continuing care communities that provide care from independent living through nursing home care. AHIP has instituted the Senior Safe at Home program, which helps make emergency repairs to make sure that seniors are safe and warm in their homes. There's been a variety of caregiver services, support groups. We've mentioned the livable home tax credit. I don't know how many of you are familiar with that, but if you build a new home with accessibility features, or if you modify your home, you can actually get a tax credit from the state for that. And the city has also instituted a program to reduce fees if you have certain accessibility features in your home. We've seen the proliferation of family councils in long-term care facilities, and a number of businesses like Sue's who provide care management and service coordination. So we're looking at new things, and we have identified a number of new developments that will be available to provide new rental and home ownership opportunities for seniors, incorporating universal designs and also new supports. Seaville Village is a new initiative here to try to bring the village concept of neighbors helping neighbors. We do need to find more supports for family caregivers. Mountainside is one of the few long-term care facilities that accept auxiliary grants, and so providing long-term care for people with limited financial means continues to be a real struggle. And so these are some things that we still need to flesh out a bit in housing and long-term care. Transportation has done a really good job in building new sidewalks, bike lanes. There's been a couple of streetscape projects, maybe three or four streetscape projects across the region that make communities more walkable and attractive. We've seen road construction in Charlottesville. Some of the lights now will talk to you and tell you when it's safe to cross the street. Everybody across the region mentioned Jaunt and Jaunt services as being a real improvement in transportation options. There is transportation now provided by PACE, the program of all-inclusive care for the elderly, and also a number of accessible taxis that provide transportation. So we have identified a number of projects, a lot of road projects, a lot of sidewalk projects, a lot of bike projects, crosswalks in the transportation area, but what we have not really been able to address particularly well are options for non-drivers. Jaunt and CAT, I have plans for expansion, but they're a little reluctant to put them in the plan and put timelines to them because they're so funding dependent. So trying to find ways to
really clarify what we can do in terms of transit expansion here. One of the big issues with riding buses is just being able to get to the bus stop and to wait for the bus at the bus stop. There's been some bus stops that have been revised to be more accessible, more comfortable, provide shelter, a place to sit, but there's still a lot of bus stops that are really hard to use for people, and so it interferes with transportation as an option. And every place we went, every input session talked about we need to find a way just to mobilize volunteers to provide little short trips around town to get shopping done, to get errands done, and we have not yet figured out a way to tackle that. So this is a work in progress, and so as we've moved through this, we've been able to identify a lot of things that are already in progress, a lot of activities to move us forward, but we still have some holes. And so we are working over the next 2 months to have conversations across the community, to work with partners, to see what they might be willing to do, and to include in the plan. So we've got about 2 more months that we're working on this. This is still a work in progress, but we are planning to present the draft as a plan in the middle of April at our office, the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission, downtown at 401 East Water Street, to have one last input session and to hear what people can tell us about what still needs to be added to the plan. And then our goal for releasing the plan is May the 20th, and so we will be having a celebration event for that at the Carver Recreation Center with a band from the Senior Center, I think, and catering from Java to celebrate the progress and to release the plan. So our steering committee is the L4L Steering Committee, and this is a list. I do have handouts if you would like them, or cards, my business cards if you'd like to pick one up. But the steering committee continues to meet. We'll be meeting next week to guide this process, and we'll really be taking hold of kind of these community conversations to move this forward. So I understand we have a lot of time for questions, and I would like to take not just questions, but if you have things that you would like to include, like to see included in the plan, ideas that you have, things that you know about, opportunities for us to have conversations with people, we'd be delighted to hear those from you.
As I'm listening to all the planning and reporting that's going on, what I'm wondering is whose responsibility and who takes the initiative to do specific actions to fulfill the goals of the plan. There seems, I don't see the bridge there between the planning process and the accomplishment of specific actions to achieve those goals.
Well, as we put actions into the plan, for most of them, we actually list who is responsible for that. So we're not just putting things out there that we hope somebody will pick up. What we put in the plan has a partner attached to it and sometimes a timeline attached to it if they can include that. So we aren't looking to have things in the plan that are kind of pie in the sky things, but actually on the ground activities that partners have committed to carrying out.
This is more of a share than a question. Newcomers Club, which I assume you're familiar with, has just started a singles group, and it's a potential model for taking unrelated people who are interested in a particular thing. They also have a very raucous social bridge group that meets at the Independence a couple of times a month. But it's pretty easy to get in touch with them, and this new singles group might be a model for bringing companions together.
Yeah, that's great. So if they're easy, can you tell me how to get a hold of them?
No, but I can probably email it to you.
Okay.
I think you can Google newcomers of Charlottesville and it will come up. You've not heard of them?
I have heard of them, but I have not really had much contact with them.
We have one member, Barbara Drake, who's been very active, which is how I got involved. But I can send you an email and send you their latest newsletter because it's electronic.
Okay, that'd be great. Thank you so much.
I'm one went to an initial meeting for It Takes a Village, and I never heard another thing. And you obviously have a real problem with transport. What happened to that? I was a member up in Washington, so.
I'm going to let Sue answer that.
The village is alive and well. took a little hiatus for a number of months, but it has started to meet again. There is a website titled SeavilleVillage.com, and you're more than welcome to go back online. Just a little history. There was a pilot program in the Woolen Mills neighborhood. It's off and moving forward. I mean, when I say off, it's taken off and moving forward. And we're still interested, we meaning the village, or people involved in the village concept, are very interested in doing presentations in neighborhoods to really share what that concept is and how neighborhoods can start mobilizing. I know one was held in Earliesville, and as a result, there are about 10 people from Earliesville that have joined the planning committee. So I would just encourage anybody who's interested to go online and feel free to call me if you know, you want to know when our next meeting is.
Thank you, Sue.
The answer to that question just partially answered one of my questions. excuse me, I'm relatively new to Charlottesville, and some of these things were of interest to me, like just finding out exactly how Jaunt worked. And I'm no stranger to the internet or anything like that, and I did read about it, but was still somewhat confused when I read all the information as to where the buses go, how much they cost, who, you know, who is eligible for them. So I'm wondering if there's some way, and this is where her answer may have been part of this, some way to make this information easily digestible for people and remembered, and perhaps it is by getting into neighborhoods, small groups, you know, and discussing it so that more and more people become familiar with it. And I did have a second question, and I'd like to know other ways that all of these wonderful things can be better known to everyone and easily understood. My second question is, does this plan include the sources of funding for many of these ideas? Thank you.
Well, funding is certainly always a challenge, and that's one of the reasons why some folks are kind of reluctant to say this is what we're going to do in the next 5 years, because they're not sure if they can get the funding or not. But for those things that, you know, people have committed to, I think that many of them do have some funding lined up. A lot of the transportation projects, of course, are already funded. They're in the capital improvement plan. Other things like the renovation of the Jefferson Madison Regional Library, which is a great center for a lot of activities, that's in the capital improvement plans for the city and the county. But definitely it's an issue and will keep us probably from being as specific about some things as we would like, because funding is always uncertain.
You mentioned both the Jaunt and Charlottesville Air Transit, Jaunt being the on-demand and CAT the fixed route. Is there any coordination between those activities? For instance, would you have a map that shows which senior facilities are served by the transit and which are only with Jaunt, for example?
I think so. You're looking for something that actually shows both together in one map?
Well, Jaunt is more variable, but I mean, one of the things that brought this up to me was at one point in recent years, I believe one aging facility actually banned the local bus company from servicing them.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that.
Well, I can tell you later.
Sounds like a good story.
The residents didn't want it anymore because of the noise. There wasn't enough users, and so the residents requested it be removed from the community. Sorry.
Yeah, the one senior living requested Kat not to come in any longer. It was a resident request because the noise overwhelmed the benefit. Not many people were using it. So it was Kat responded to neighborhood desires.
Well, I'm thinking that Kat does pretty good maps of the routes. Are you saying that there's not good maps now?
Or? I was just one that's specifically oriented towards senior facilities.
Oh, okay. I see. Well, I will take that as a suggestion because we have not looked at that yet. So specifically looking at seniors. Yes, sir.
I'm just curious. In the beginning of your talk, you gave a statistic, a measure of your 2020 plan that looked like it had been really something. Namely, you placed in the top five in the country, right? What are the other communities that are up there that are doing things? I'm just curious.
Well, there's more and more communities as time goes on. So this kind of the thing that kicked off us doing this here and trying to reactivate and refresh the plan was because the National Association for Area Agents on Aging had picked, I think, six communities that they were working with. Uh-huh. So there's more and more. It's becoming much more common. The age wave planning is something that's recognized as really being needed by communities, but I don't have a list on me that I could tell you kind of what those are. But there are lists like that. Mm-hmm. Different folks publish mm-hmm. different lists, and so different communities can be recognized by different bodies. But
your planning effort really has been recognized and stands out.
Yeah. Well, the 2020 plan was, just because it was so early and so, you know, so new and one of the front runners of that. So that planning work that we did here was really kind of on the leading edge across the country. But the award that was done in 2012 was not so much for the planning process itself as for the community. So I think this community does have pretty strong commitment to kind of livability and being inclusive and being age friendly. So it's a recognition of the region as a whole.
Thank you.
Now, if there aren't any more questions, I guess we're done. Is there anything else, Sue, you need to say?
For the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, I'm Dan Gould.